And your name was, you're like the Nordales or the Norlins.
No,
tell me your name
again. N-O-R-L-I-N.
Norlin.
Yeah.
I see.
That's pretty cool. Norlin, they called me. Norlin, in Swedish, it's Norlin.
Yes, yes.
Norlin, yeah.
Now, you didn't come from Sweden, did you?
Well, I come from Sweden to Seattle.
You did?
Yeah. In 1907.
I see.
And then I was about a year in Seattle, then I went up 8 to Kanoa, to the railroad. So the railroad, I was there till 9, and I went out to the Seattle Fair. Then I was working around the Logan Woods there for a little while, and I took off in Alaska. It's called to Kaikuk. But the four of us. But we got, we got some bad news there from Hot Springs, so we changed our mind and come to Fairbanks. And I've been in Fairbanks ever since, and I'm the only liberal out of the four here. Emil Olsen, he drowned
Who?
In the channel. Emil Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
He drowned in the Channel Lawr.
He did.
He was on the way up to Kaikuk. He met Julius Lawson. Gus Wilson is outside in Kirkland, and Axel Olsen went outside, and he's dead. He died out.
Mm.
So I've been on the only one here left now, except Gus Wilson. He's still alive, and he's 2 years older than I am. He's 88 now, and I'm 86. So he's going to one country this summer. He's just lost his wife. He was been in Kirkland about 4 or 5 years. He used to be a mining man, and he used to work for AFE, blacksmith. So he went outside, and he's been living there. After he retired, he's been living outside in Kirkland. He got a home there. Now he's going to old country. I don't know if he's going to sell his home or not, but he wouldn't stay in the old country. He'd be back.
Just made a trip. Well, tell me, when you went to Cordova, you went to the railroad there.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, the railroad had just been built, hadn't it?
No, we were building it.
You were?
Yeah, we were building it in 8 and 9. And it wasn't finished even when I went out in 9. I went out to the Seattle Fair. Then I got my Fairbanks in 10. And then I worked at the Naked Head Association for Walter Fisher.
Who did you work for?
Walter Fisher on Naked Head on Dome Creek.
On Dome Creek?
Yeah. I worked there 27 months straight. And I lost 8 days.
Goodness.
10 hours. 7 days a week.
My goodness.
Oh, tough work. Tough work. Yeah. It was awful hard work. $5 a day and board.
Yes.
Well, that was pretty good. I was working outside. I get the top wages and the logging boots. I get $3.75 and I had to pay 75 cents for the board.
Yes.
And he was $5 clear.
Including room and board.
So then I went out in 14, walked out over the Valdez Trail in 14.
Tell me something. When you walked out over the Valdez Trail, where was that glacier? You know that big glacier now that comes down there toward the highway? The Muldrow? Is that the Muldrow Glacier that comes
we
down?
We didn't pay no attention.
You didn't pay any attention? No.
At all. We just walked, and we walked the road all the way. In them days, you know, there was no automobiles going out there, you know, because there was nothing but horses. And Bobby Shelton is the only one, that first one that ran the automobile over the Valdez Trail.
That ran the what to Valdez?
Bobby Shelton is the only one, first one.
Bobby Shelton?
Yeah.
And what did he run?
He ran the Ford.
Is that so?
Hello, Missy.
Hello, Albert.
I pretty didn't know you. I was slicked up. That's one of the nurses.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, that one, the white.
Pretty ladies.
Yeah. Oh, she's pretty when she's looked at. But she was pretty when she was young.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, Bobby Shelton is the only one that he rode in. But in 1915 or 16, I think he took the Ford over the trail. And he got a new Ford from Henry Ford for doing
it.
And he shipped the old one out to the, they got him out there on the, in the showcase. He's Bobby Shelton's Ford that he drove out.
Is that so?
And there was no, when there was no automobile road, then we walked it because we have horses, four team of horses, you know, or I mean two team, four horses. But we walked it because it charged $180 for riding. So we were young. It took us 10 days though, 370 some miles. Still we made 35, 40 miles a day, but oh, that's the hardest work I have. I wasn't a very good walker either. I was young.
You walked 35 miles a day?
Yeah.
That's a good day's walk.
Some days 40.
That's a big walk.
Yeah. Well, we had to make all of 30 and 35 to make it in 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we made it in 10 days, but I was old in
that was in the summer then?
It was in the fall, October.
I see.
In October.
Snow then. There was snow on the ground.
It was snow in the mining. Well, it was nice walking, nice weather.
Cool.
Yeah.
And not big snow yet.
There was no snow, no. Uh-huh. No snow at all. It was all buried up.
To go back to Cordova, you know, I'm real interested in hearing about that. It was quite a project, that building that railroad.
There was Cordova, I like Cordova. It was a very nice town, and I understand it's growing. But it's the fishing that built it up, because the railroad didn't do it any good because they quit. They quit hauling the ore from there.
Well, that's right. They quit in 1937, I think they shut that down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the time they were building it, didn't they have to put it across the front of a glacier?
They had to put it over the river.
Over the river?
Yeah, a bridge over the river.
Yes.
Oh, the glaciers was all right. They were there was glaciers all the way from Cordova up to 55 miles. But not really bad, but it did kill some men though, when they come down and kill four or five men. We were there to dig them out, have to dig them out.
Is that so?
We didn't find them all either, they went in the river.
And these were landslides?
Yeah, landslides come right from the hill down.
I see.
And took there were quite a few walkers them days, you know, walking up the railroad, walking up to the camp. The 55 was the camp. And they walked up, down the way coming, they come to slide and take them in right in the river.
Mm.
We found three of them. Oh boy, how they had been working up over. Their fingers was wore off like this, you know, from scratching.
Oh.
Right up to the first joint.
Yes. Oh dear. Oh dear. They tried hard.
Oh, don't think they did. Man, they liked them. And we only found three out of seven.
Mm-hmm.
So they went in the river because we sure done a lot of ditching there to find them, but we didn't. We find 3 years.
Well, now what did you do on the building of the railroad?
Oh, I was only roughneck. We had contract, you know.
Yes.
Getting the grade, you know, we call it station work. We were 12 of us.
I see.
Had a contract from there.
Building the roadbed is what you were doing?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, building the road.
Putting the rock in place?
Yeah. Oh, we didn't have very much rock work, but we got pretty good money for rock, for $1.20. Loose rock was 60 cents, dirt 30 cents.
No, wait, loose rock was 60 cents?
That was the best money in that.
And dirt was 30 cents?
30 cents.
A yard?
$1.20 for solid rock.
And $1.20 for solid rock?
Yeah.
And how would you get it?
Well, we blast it with the coyote holes and then we blow it up, loose it up, and we wheel it out.
I see.
Out in the fill.
Well, now, how did you go to work with this group of men that were doing this?
How did I go to work? Well,
I mean, you said there were 12 of you and you had a contract.
Yes, we worked. We partners.
You were partners?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering about the story of how you got together.
Oh, we had a bunch come up there. There was about 500 men in camp, you know. We picked our own gang, a friend of mine, and the other fellow picked a friend. We were 12 of us.
I see.
No trouble. We got along fine, worked pretty hard. Made $10.50 a day.
Now, did you stay in Cordova, in the town?
No, 1909 I went out.
No, I don't mean that. I mean when you were working.
Oh,
did you have
a
camp out?
We had a camp right there. Right there, but we had a cut. Had a camp.
I see.
And we cooked ourselves bats. We got the grub from the company. We'd done our own cooking.
Uh-huh.
And I told the old guy, well, I was young them days, you know, and I learned, I didn't know anything to cook, but I learned a lot.
Yeah.
You had to cook.
You had to cook.
You had to.
This was 1908.
It was 1989.
Nine, yes. Now, when did you come up in 1908? In the spring or the summer?
Oh, I come up in the spring.
I see.
In the spring or the... Oh, we laid in Cadore a long time. Oh, before we went up up on the line. Oh, it was in first part of May. We went up on the line because we had to lay on the side hill in a tent. We laid 5 hours in a tent on the side hill, you know. But Cadore was cheap them days.
Yes.
Do you know that we bought ham and eggs in Cadore? Used as cheap as Seattle. 25 cents for ham and eggs. And 15 cents in a Jap restaurant for ham and eggs and bacon and eggs.
By golly, you can't do that today.
No.
No.
Now I'll tell you what I big difference. This was in 1908.
Yes.
Then I was outside and in 10 I come up here. Then I worked here till 14. Then I walk over the Valdez Trail.
Yes.
Out.
Yes.
Then I tell the boys, you're paying a dollar in this end and dollar and a half in the middle of the road for 100 miles. Then we paid a dollar and a half from this end, $2 in the middle, 100 miles, and then dollar and a half in our end. So I told the boys, I said, when you come to Cadore, I'm going to take you in. I said, I treat you on a good meal. I said, it ain't going to cost me $2 a meal either. So at that time, you could buy ham and eggs in the mall there for 85 cents. And when I come up to this Rainer Grant, that changed the name on the place where we used to eat.
Was the name?
Rainer Grant.
Rainer Grant
Hotel, and there was a restaurant and a hotel.
See, the Rainer Grant.
And so I go and look on the bill of fare. We go in the morning, I thought it was 2 bits breakfast. You know what the tank to charge there? 85 cents in fabric. $1.25 for ham and eggs.
The price went up?
Went up from quarter to $1.25.
In what, 6 years?
In 6 years, about, yeah.
For crying out loud.
And it was nice surprised. I couldn't back out. I had already broke.
You had to stand for breakfast.
Well, they were old friends anyhow.
Yes.
Well, funny thing, them days I got bought a lot in Cadore, best got done block trading town for $25. And believe me, you know, the prices went up. Same one lot as I had to buy from Arslan, $25, $2,500.
For what?
$2,500 for the same lot.
For a lot?
Yeah.
My word.
And 6 years ago was $25.
Yeah.
I could have bought it.
Yeah.
I was young and I didn't know, and I didn't think things was going to jump like that. But I understand everything is high in Cadore, but it was a nice town. I liked the town. But the only thing that you could live on there was fishing.
That's right, and you're not a fisherman.
Well, I was, but I hadn't fished that kind of a fish. I'd done back home fishing. But not that
in Sweden
kind of,
you had fished?
Yeah, not that kind of thing.
Yeah, what kind of fishing did you do in Sweden?
Oh, smells. You know this here, don't you get this caviar, do you get the eggs out of it? Then fish we used to catch. You see the same thing there back home. I used to catch them in nets. We had 13 nets in a string and we strung them out. And we got $3.20 for 2 pounds of eggs. And we thought we got pretty good. Now we're going to let our steel correspondent with my grand, with my, they call her Sister Dane, my sister was used raised in her home. $23 for 2 pounds.
For goodness sakes, yes.
It was $3.20 for 2 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
That way, now they're making money.
Eight times the price. Well, of course, this is the way it has gone all over the world.
Yeah.
Everything has gone up.
Yes, that's right.
But now, is that in the along the ocean or in the rivers?
No, what is the Baltic?
In the Baltic, yes.
In the Baltic, yeah.
Yes.
They are better fish in the Baltic and you got here in America. Oh, they're wonderful fish.
I've heard that Baltic fish are wonderful.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, salmon. Oh, you got no idea. This salmon is good. We call it good. But it's no compared. There's much of a fat between this layer of meat. And beautiful taste to it.
The Baltic salmon.
It must be the feed. That's the only thing I can see.
Yes.
Because, but they're not as plentiful as they're over here.
Yes, the Pacific salmon have been a big running fish, you know, yeah. Huge numbers. That's what you would have had to do in Cordova then, salmon fishing there.
Oh, yes, salmon fishing.
Yeah, and that was...
Of course, it would have been good, but I just didn't know nothing about that kind of fishing they're done there, the trapping and stuff, you know. So I put a mining. My game was mining, of course, I mean, I've been mining my head down for myself, work for wages. I made about $500-$600 in the summer. The boys, some of the boys went outside and a lot of them stayed here and worked their money away.
Yes.
They never struck nothing. We sunk holes, 2-3 holes. In the spring, we were broke.
Yes.
We had to go to work.
Well, now, you spent 2 summers and a winter there at Cordova, didn't you?
I spent part of 2 summers. 1 summer and a winter and part of in 9. I went out to the fair.
What did you do through the winter?
Well, we did. We did cut some wood. We cut some ties too, you know.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but we didn't make no money, you know, in the winter, only managed to eat. But in summer, that's the time we made money. Contracting, we made 10,000 feet per cent a day. It was pretty good them days, because them days you could buy something for $10. Now you can't buy nothing for $10. So things have changed and all. But we thought we did pretty good, but we made $10 on contract. Of course, we worked pretty good, too. Yeah, so that's what it is.
Were very many of those men there in Cordova, did they stay on in Alaska, or were they just up for that season, do you think, and they left?
No, they pretty much went outside.
They didn't stay, no.
It's the same thing here in the early days. But our mining here, they come in and made, what, $500-$600, suits are shut down on the phone. They used to spend one night in Fairbanks and out they go.
Spend one night in Fairbanks?
Yeah, out.
And off they go?
Out they go, you know. Of course, the Fairbanks didn't make much money on them for us to come in and stay on the creek the whole summer. And then stay one day on the, in town when they come go out.
It's the same way today, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much the same way.
Well, Mr. Norlin, tell me about when you left Cordova, then you came back up. You said you went down the Stikine. Did I hear you say something about the, no, was it the Stikine?
I went down to the fair, Seattle Fair.
You went to the Seattle Fair?
In 1909.
Yeah.
And then after that, I worked around the Logan Woods a little while, and then I come up to Fairbanks.
I see. 21st
day of June, I landed in Fairbanks in 1910.
Uh-huh.
Right in front of
21st day of June in 1910. Now, do you realize that's what, just about 64 years ago today?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah?
That's right, yeah.
This is some kind of a celebration, because it's today, the 22nd is today.
22nd?
Of June, yes.
21st, yes.
Yeah. Well, so then you went to mining up here. Now, you said you'd worked on the rivers, or been around the rivers a lot.
Well, I've been here. When I was in Palmings here, we used to go up and down the river, you know, ride around, you know. It's only we see the river bank and so on. I never done the fishing on the river.
But how about working on the boats?
No.
You never worked on the boats?
No, I never did.
You had to travel on the rivers, though.
I did come up from Seattle with the boat, come up to Skagway, Whitehorse, and Dawson, and from Dawson up here to Fairbanks by a river.
You did?
Yeah.
Now, when was that?
1910.
That was 1910. That's how you came back up?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That's when you went to the fair?
Nine was the fair. Nine, I went out from Cordova.
Right.
To the Seattle Fair.
Yes.
Then I took that in and I went to work around the logging camp in, like, ready to come to Fairbanks.
So then you took the boat up to Skagway from Seattle in 1910 in the spring.
Yeah, 1910, yeah.
And then how did you go from Skagway?
I walked over the White Pass.
You walked over that White Pass?
Yeah. They charged $20 for the train and we figured we could walk 100 miles for $20.
Yeah.
So we did. It took us 3 days too. Tough walking on them ties.
Oh, you walked the train? We
walked behind the train or in the railroad track.
On the railroad track?
It's pretty hard walking on ties because they're only that far apart and we...
They're not a man's step. They're not a comfortable step.
No. We had to take two or else one.
Yes.
Pointless.
That's rough walking.
Yeah, rough walking. Tough walking.
There was no trail along beside the railroad.
No. It was, we used to walk on the railroad track. We used to have a stick between us, you know. And then we used to walk on the rails, but it was kind of funny too. You must slip and stuff, you know. Two and two. All the poor walk on the White Pass.
That how many of you were there?
Four.
Four of you, yes. Yeah. And the train people, they didn't object to your walking over the tracks?
No, they didn't object at all.
Did you stop there, you know, where the train stops at the halfway point?
We walked to Lake Bennett, it was 41 miles. And I met those old, completely old, we all were tired, 41 miles on the tires. It took us 14 hours, too. But then the next day we didn't walk so far, but we made it in 3 days, though, it's safe to Whitehorse.
Did you meet anybody along the way?
No, not meeting anybody coming this way. We walked by some of you. We were better walkers than most of them. And still I wasn't very good. I never claimed to be better was a walker. But I managed to keep up with the boys. Yeah.
Well, now what did you do then when you got to Whitehorse?
We bought a boat.
You bought a boat?
Yeah. 16-foot boat, and we were all used to water, you know, from back home.
Sure.
And we bought four oars and we had a boat, and we started up to the Yukon, you know, there is, down the Yukon to Dawson, went to Dawson. And as far as, we went to Lake Labard, it's 21 miles, we stopped there. And there was a wind blowing our way, and we had a sail, and we reached the pole up, and we sailed right in the middle of the, and they mothered all the boats, a lot of boats on the river. And they told me about crazy, you know, doing things like that, and the wind blowing, and there was east blowing five. We made it in 5 hours, 31 miles, so we didn't do
it. Well, now, where is Lake Labarge?
That about 4 hours, a couple of hundred miles from Whitehorse.
I see. I didn't know you would go
come
over Lake...
Coming between Dawson, about halfway between Dawson and Whitehorse. Lake Labarge, 31 miles.
I see.
Nice, very pretty lake.
Hmm.
And we stopped along there to be a put out short places. And the native had killed moose, you know.
Oh.
So we were trying to buy some moose meat from them. Well, we come from the outside, you know. And we were used to buy meat cheap there. And they wanted 25 cents a pound for moose meat, you know. It didn't look very good, so we passed it up and went.
The Indians wanted 35 cents a pound for the moose meat.
35 cents a pound for moose.
And what would beef have been selling for then outside?
Oh, you could get beef for 25 cents a pound.
25 cents a pound, I see.
But if you get good moose, it's just as good as beef.
Sure.
I have had moose here. Oh, don't say much. It's just as good as beef and better.
Yes.
My boy killed a moose cow in Iowa. You know it was better than beef.
Old moose can be real good.
Ooh, was it good? We cooked. We never wasted a bowl. We were mining. My two boys and I was mining on Last Chance. And we used every bit of it. Never wasted a bit. On bone, we used to cook soup on bone. What a beautiful soup. And meat was just like pork, white. I never ate no moose meat like
that. Was moose.
It was a cow that never had any calf.
A young cow.
That never had a calf.
Is that so?
And it was sure one of them.
But then like I ate
moose.
Sort of.
We killed moose. Then it was uneatable, you know. You could hardly. So in fact, we sold it for dog feed.
Yes.
The big moose come right by the cabinets in the winter, you know, and about 4 or 5, you know, he had no time to get through the snow. And it was all starved out, and Johnny killed it. We couldn't, cooked it, but it couldn't be cooked. We couldn't chew it. So we shipped it into town for dog feed.
Hmm.
And
well, when you went down Lake Labarge then, sailing along with your three friends, you four of you were in the boat then?
Yeah. But we kept it going. We kept it going to Dawson. So I'll tell you what we did. We come with a boat. We took the boat of Lake Labarge, but I say about 100 miles. And here comes the steamboat and kept
a steamboat.
By golly, he picked us up and quit the boat, took the boat with us to Hyatt, took the boat with us to Dawson, and sold it.
Oh.
I forgot what we got for it, but we got pretty money back.
Uh-huh. That was a pretty booming town then, wasn't it, Dawson? Dawson was quite a booming town.
Oh, yeah, well, it looked to us it was washed out.
Was it?
Well, it looked that way to us, but we didn't know. The same thing we come to Chattanooga here. There was nothing but dump after dump. So he and Rosen went up on the dump. He said they tell me some pretty good spots around there. They look to me that they're all in the bank. The way all of them dumped.
Good spots are already in the bank.
Yeah, but they've mined for years and years after that.
They still mine, yes.
Good. Yeah, still a lot of money left on Chattanooga, on Valley Creek.
On Cleary Creek.
A lot of money left there, yes.
Is that so?
Nobody doing any mining nowadays. If I was young, I would be here. Hello, John.
Hi.
You were on the way home, eh? You're doing fine.
Yeah, growling like an old grizzly bear, too. He's chewing on me all day.
He's doing all right. He used to be in a wheelchair, now he walks with the kids.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, that's the way to do.
Gosh. Well, and then you went to Dawson. And you went on the riverboat then?
We took the boat, picked us up, and we took the boat with us to Dawson and sold it. But what we got for it, I can't remember.
But then where did you go from Dawson then?
Dawson, we took the boat up to Fairbanks. We landed in 21st day of June, 12 o'clock at night, right in front of the damn sea here. Then we went, walked down to the road and slept until morning. And next we took the train out to Chattanooga. Went to Doom Creek, got a job.
You did, just like that?
Just like that. And we were looking for hard work, and we sure found the right place. Plenty of it. Yeah, I worked a long time for Walter.
Now that's when men were working on lathes.
No, I wasn't working. I was working for wages then.
You were working for wages, but...
After I quit wages, we took a lay in the winter time because some of the boys went outside, some of the miners, and we stayed, four of us, when we tried to mine. We never made no money. Some coal, find a little pay, we thought it was pay, and we didn't know how to mine, and we mined a lot of ground, there was no pay. So that's the way it is. You got to learn that stuff too, same as anything else.
Somebody told me not long ago that out there in those creeks, that there were big flumes and the big sluices. There were like the turnpikes today, practically. You know, in the States, how the big highways intercept each other.
Well, you had the flumes, you know, built up in the air, you know, because you gotta have the water comes and they gotta catch the water, and then the flume. Go there, and then it goes down to the sluice boxes, and then you gotta have grave for the sluice boxes too. They gotta be open too, because you gotta have some place for the gravel to go. Tailing room, they call it. So the sluice boxes gotta be open, and the water boxes gotta be open. You don't have to have the water as long as you got grade. You don't have to have them so high, but you gotta have it. It pays to have your water boxes up and the sluice boxes up if you get grade for your tails.
Now, where did you get your water at Dome Creek?
Doom, from the river.
From the Chattanooga?
Yeah.
Was that by a ditch?
Well.
Or from did you pump it up?
It was a kind of drainage from the river. Little streams from the river came and we cut, but then we wasn't real close to the river. We were about 500 feet away from the river where we mined. But then there was little leakage from the river side streams that we picked up the water and pumped it up to the...
And you pumped it up?
Yeah, pumped it up, yeah.
And then you sluiced the ground?
Yeah, sluiced the ground, yeah.
Well, now, did you have shafts down underground, or was it surface gravel?
Oh, yes, we had shafts. I shafted a nigger head by 187 feet deep.
How deep?
187 feet.
187 feet?
Yeah.
You sunk a shaft?
No, I didn't think
no.
That I was not a contractor. I had already sunk a shaft when we started working there.
I see.
But I never sunk a shaft that deep.
No.
I just sunk a shaft 60 feet, 80 feet deep.
You did.
That's not 180.
But you had to go down that shaft?
Sure. We had it timbered, and we went down the shaft, you know. We got a hoistman here yet that hoisted where I was working.
Here in the Pioneer Home?
Yeah, in the Pioneer Home.
Who was that?
Eddie Farrell is his name.
Ed Farrell?
Yeah.
Is he here now?
Yeah, he is here. Oh. He is 2 years older than I. He is in a wheelchair. He he's awful poor at talking. He was hoisting there as long as I was there. And he was there how long I can't remember. But he was a wonderful hoistman, good man.
What makes a good hoistman?
Well, dependable. He's got to be sober, and he's got to be on, he's got to look out all the time, and he just only go by bells, that's all. You have got no other way to do it. You hoist him up like this, straight up, then there's a carrier right there, and then you take him up, the gin pole is over there,
The gin pole?
A gin pole, and hoist it up, and then he dumps it up there, and then back again, let him down. It hoisted 500 buckets a day, 187 feet deep.
Wow, that's a lot of dirt.
They had a good hoist, fast American hoist. Reed, I forgot what they call them now, but it's a Reed speed hoist. And then, you know, when he let you down, he let down 6 men at a time in a bucket. And when he let you down, sometimes you drop you like that, you had to come down after you something. But he never hurt a man, never did he.
Ed Farrell?
No, he didn't.
He was a good hoistman.
Very good. Very good. But you no good now. You can't hardly interact to remind him, but we work together. You
know? Yes.
He know me though, but he forgets. So, but Red was his pet, you know. And he went to Kaiku, he drowned in the Channel Hour. He was a good friend of mine too. We traveled together a lot.
How did he drown in the Chandelier?
Huh?
How did he drown?
Oh, they were going away the river. And he had a gun and he had a pack on him. And he didn't know. You know, when you wade the river, you know, he put the pole on the lower side of him, and then the gravel washed away from underneath the pole. He got to have the pole on the upper side, and then the sand and stuff hold the pole down. But Emil didn't know that.
I wouldn't have known that either. No, would never have thought of that.
Well,
who'd have thought?
If you had the pole on the upper side,
he'd have been all right.
He would have been all right.
So when you cross a river with a pole, you always put the pole on the
upper side, because the water comes like this down, and you put the pole on the upper side. So then the sand and stuff pile on the pole and hold the pole down. And you put it on the lower side, it washes right out.
And he washed himself a hole.
Yes, that's right. And he drowned it. He had nothing to hold him, and he didn't know any better. So Julius, his partner, he seen what happened, so he made it across. And he went to Kaikuk and get some help to have him come and try to look him up, but they never found him. And he had about $1,000 on him too. And he had a gun and some clothes in his pack bowl by and back. Nice guy, honest guy, fine fellow, but I lost him. Yeah. If I'd been, I was married in 14.
You were married?
Yes, I was married. I had 5 kids.
You have 5 kids?
Yeah, 3 boys and 2 girls.
Is that so?
And only got two girls left. All of them left and they're dead. I had bad luck. You know, I had tough break in my marriage. I was looking for trouble and I found lots of it. You know, I got married in 14 and I had 5 children. Arthur was the oldest, Johnny was second, Alina was third.
Johnny, Jane, Arthur, Alina?
And Lloyd. They called him the Kingpin, he was the youngest.
What was the fourth one? I missed the fourth one.
Lloyd was his name.
Lloyd. And what was the fifth?
Fifth was Lloyd.
Oh, I see.
It was Alina. It was Arthur, the oldest, Johnny, the second, and Alina, the third, a daughter. And Jane the fourth, a daughter, and Lloyd the fifth, a boy.
I see.
So I tell you what happened. In Johnny, Arthur went to war. And he accumulated the sickness. He was in war about a year. And he accumulated the sickness here. He came back in the hospital here, 21st day of June, 12 o'clock at night. The same hour, he landed in front of the NC, coming from the outside, 30 years later. He was 30 years when he drowned on his birthday, and his 21st day of June. It wasn't his birthday.
He drowned?
He died.
He died.
Now that, I was getting ahead of my story. No, that fellow died.
Yes.
Arthur died. And I was with him. So.
But that he in here in Fairbanks?
In fact, 44.
I see.
In fact, I mean the hospital. In fact, across the river.
Huh? Yeah.
The hospital was across the river then. Then my Saint boy Joseph. Lloyd, in 44. Oh, he was an awful nice boy. He was. This Arthur, he was not very much of a boy. And I say, even if he was my son, I say, he accumulated a sickness, what they call a sickness. He was a drunkard.
Oh.
And that's how he was so sick in the hospital. So, in 14, my boy Lloyd, he was a dandy. They were working together. He was head man for the, if he was only 19 years old, he was the highest paid man for the. He was driving a cat, he was running blade, and he was running them, what do you call them, that drag lines. He'd run anything they had. And he got $1.80 an hour. And I was getting top wages myself. I was running the rockers, and I was supposed to be top job.
Yes, that's
top
right.
Top $1.50, I got.
Sure. And he was making more than you were.
Oh, sure. I was only 19 years old. So I comes to the phone and was going to, they call him to go to work. They didn't call me because they didn't start the crusher up, so they called him. He was a, could run anything, grader or any down, truck or what. And he was a good repairman too. So he said, I'm going to go out to make $1,000 before I go. He went the year before. I was away about 10 days. He made $1,000 in Ratton. And he thought he was going to do the same thing before he go back for Rotterdam. He went out there, was in 44, in the spring, and he drowned. He never come back. Oh, that was an awful blow to me because well, it was my eye stone. And so it went. I buried him. I went and fished him up at the Beaver House Lake up Cheeverly. And we buried him. But now, I was in a hospital, I was in, I come here 5 years ago. And my boy was,
Have you been here 5 years?
I've been here 5 years.
You have?
Yeah.
Oh my.
So and my boy was staying at home, you know. And he was the second one. It was, his name was John. And he was 54 years when he got killed. He got stabbed to death. And I have right in his heart. That's it, my home, in town.
In town.
1221 Third Avenue.
1221
Third. Right in front of the park plant. Third. And by golly, he got stabbed. And he was a man, as I say, he was the same as Art. He was an alcoholic. He was not the same as he was when he was, when he went to war.
Sure.
He got that in war, learned that in France. He was 4 years in France fighting a young. He was shot too, right there.
Through his calf.
Yeah, but not serious. Hmm. So he got killed.
Where was the where was their mother all this time?
Now that mother, you know, I was divorced with her when baby was 9 months old, and the oldest boy was 30, Art was 30. You know, he was just like the boys. He was. I was out in the creeks. I was tending bar at the Nordell Hotel for the old man Nordell, and tending bar and doing everything. Him and I only was then. We had lots of rooms to rent out, but it was a panic here, awful dull, slow. So we only two of us, so I worked for him. And I didn't make enough money, so I went out mining.
Aye.
Good night. And at that, I thought I would do better, which I did better, but I got worse. She got doing the prohibition. Everybody in town was making beer. And she got in the habit of drinking that beer, and she went to ruin. And I had to divorce her. Do you know that was a hard thing to do, but I had to. Because I could not keep her because I didn't make enough money. She spent, had company there in the house, come home. I told her Thanksgiving, I said, I would be home. I'm going to send you home to Turkey. I was working at Chattanooga and drilling for the pickup thing. And so
you were working at the Chattanooga?
Eh?
You were working at Chattanooga drilling for
drilling.
The FE company?
Yeah.
I see.
And so she said, it'd be all right. And I, instead of doing what I told her, I come home. And I'd already sent home a 20-pound turkey, 19 and 20-pound turkey. And she was a wonderful cook, my wife. And when I come home, I was surprised. They were surprised to see me. You know. And the boys was there in the front room, and the girls. And a little boy, he was only 9 months old, so he was in bed. So I went in there, and I wasn't welcome. So I said, good evening. And when I seen that, the people that were there were no good people. No, thank you, I don't smoke.
And so what a day for me.
They were drinking people. Beer was on the table, and when I was home, there was no such a thing on the table as beer bottles. And I didn't believe in drinking, and she turned out to be one of the worst alcoholics that to me.
It's a horrible vice.
The result was I had to divorce her. And I gave her a promise 3 different times, I had her dismissed. I gave John Clark $40 for each time I had her dismissed. Then we was nothing but gold money, and I gave $20 every time I had her dismissed, 3 different times. So the last time I told her, Emma, I said, now, if you'd like this, I'll give you all the money I make. I says, I wouldn't put nothing. I give you my check. If you stay home and take care of the children, which they ain't entitled to have care, they wouldn't be. Who then care? And if Mama should do it, I can't do it. You know what she told me? That started the war. She says, to hell with you and your kids. And was never, oh, she was just as crazy for the kids as I was. But it was the booze that turned her that way in her head. So I said, so bad, Emma, but this time I'm going to go through it, and I'm dead. And I'm glad I'm dead. But she didn't want to go. She was home, the park, that woman's husband was his father. He was a U.S. Marshal. And he knew me. And he come down there and got her. But she didn't want to go. But I said, Emma, no, you can talk me to the end of the rope. You must go. I said, and do you know the kids? She could have been very good. And the boys, the oldest two boys said, Papa, we at least can sleep tonight.
Wasn't that too bad?
When she went away.
Yeah.
And after that, she was married 5 different times. She was a beautiful woman, pretty woman. But that liquor turned her bug house.
Oh.
And so she used to meet me on the street, you know, and she was in the living room, from one cabin to another. And I know she was living poor, she was getting thin. And I told her, I used to meet her, just, by golly, Emma, I'm getting hungry. Good enough for you, you got them stiff. and then she told her, have you got any money? But you know, I couldn't have much money because I had a couple of thousand in the old country, I had transfer, you know. And as long as that didn't last very long because you left me with a lot of debt. And I made pretty good money, but as I say, I never made enough money for her that I could make a go out of it. Because when she was sober, yes, we lived good, never was short of nothing. But if you're drinking, you know, half of it went to booze.
Yeah, it's an expensive
Expensive habit. And besides, the kids didn't get the care they would have. So I sued for the kids. And then George Clegg asked me, do you think, Albert, that you can make it? 5 kids, not expensive. Yes, I says, I'm sure gonna try, because I'm not buying a whiskey, and I'm not smoking, and I'm not drinking, and I'm buying grub forever. I make some $250, $300 a month. So I think I'm sure I'll make it. Good enough, I'll give you the decision of the kids to see. But she was right to see him. When she was sober, but not when she was drunk. But she didn't see him very often. She lost interest in him.
Now, what happened to the two girls?
Girls, I got them yet.
They're here.
I go down and visit with them. I got them in Grail, yeah.
They're in Grail.
They're all women now. They're much older than you.
Is that right?
54 years old is the oldest one.
Is she?
And I'm 52.
Well, they're not a lot older than I am, but...
But I'll tell you now that that's all I got left out of my family.
Yes. Well, that's nice you have them. Who are they?
Mrs. Callahan is one. Her son is a city engineer.
The city engineer?
And her other son is an electrical engineer. His name is John.
John Callahan.
And he is engineer for the Bureau of Public Roads.
Oh.
Down at Kenai.
At Kenai. Oh.
Yeah. And the third one is where his father's staying down at the cabin. That he's working for somebody. But he has nothing yet, because he making $8 now.
Yeah.
Whatever he's doing, I do not know.
Now, who is your other daughter?
Elida Slayback is her name.
Slayback.
She got a daughter having name of Candy.
McCandy.
She works for the post office.
Oh yes. Hmm.
And Janie's daughter is working for with Elida, where she works in a printing office, a Jessen's printing office.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I think
that's
I've met
my daughter. She's kind of head lady there.
Yes.
They're making good money.
Sure.
And they got nice home. I gave them a home apiece.
Uh huh.
And a lot to peace, so my daughter's just gonna move into my house now. And I ain't mine anymore, I deeded it over to him.
I see.
My boy Johnny, he had a old home, and them two, I gave him a house apiece in Grail. So I got no property anymore.
I see. We're just talking about the early days. Come introduce yourself.
This man is old. I remember him when I was a kid when I was running the hotel. He used to be playing around the pool table.
You should have screens and have a picture, don't you?
Unfortunately, it doesn't make pictures. No,
it doesn't play that way.
No, it doesn't play that way. Uh-huh. What is your name?
Your name is Callahan.
Is this Mr.
Dick
Callahan? There's a lot of Callahans around this country. He's going to run out on a
secret. My daughter's name was married to a Callahan.
Yes.
And she was divorced him.
Uh-huh.
And she got 5 children by him.
Oh, my.
I can show you the pictures. I got them in my room, but...
Well, you know, I've got to go pretty quick, but I'd like to hear some more. I think your experiences in Alaska, you know, were really quite interesting, the early mining, and
I'll tell you, I got so much to tell you. I'll tell you something really interesting. I should be here telling you this, because if I wasn't really lucky, I wouldn't be here to tell you. You know, I was working on the 187 feet shaft there.
You were, yes.
And I was working not for Fisher, I was working for Lieutenant. Driving points there. Red Olson and I. You mean Red Olson that drowned in the channel?
Yes.
Him and I was partners. And then I was playing him Olson, Ray Olson.
Oh, Ray.
You were driving point there. We got ahead of the wheelers. And the wheelers. The boss said, no, he said, boy, you got to put on the wheelbar because you got so much dirt ahead. Well,
you have so much what?
We had so much dirt towed ahead.
Dirt?
Dirt. We steamed the ground. And
thawed.
The
dirt thawed. Yes.
And by golly, you always said, you better go to town because you haven't been to town for a couple of years, so you better go to town. I told him, we went to town. And when we had... When we was in town, the shaft caved in.
The shaft caved in?
Yeah. And we got Fisher called us up that, boys, you better get back to the lieutenant because you need help.
Yes.
You know, the shaft caved in and a friend of yours, Oscar Blomqvist, and Ed Peterson is down in the shaft. They're working and Southern Richard, a 9-man old tool.
We're in that shaft?
In that shaft. 9 in the ground, under in the drift.
In the drifts.
And everything was caved in.
Oh my.
So I go out and we start to dig. We could do that. The Walter Fisher, he said, Albert, let's come with me. We go to Esther and get a drill. And we went to Esther Creek and got a drill. Walter Fisher, Ben Espy, and myself. Them two were drillers. And I was no driller yet, but I know drilling. By Walter, I was fired. And I went there to Esther Siding, and we walked the drill on the road to Esther Siding, put them on the railroad track, and took them to Chattanooga. Then walked them from Olness down to Niggerhead and start drilling. You know that one, the fishes stayed 27 hours on the rope before he got down, a hole down, so they could put a pipe down and put some soup down to that hole so they could eat.
Is that so?
And then we rolled the blankets about that size, you know, the hole is six.
And he drilled a 6-inch hole?
Yeah.
187 feet down?
In 27 hours.
In 27 hours.
He stayed on the rope 27 hours. Oh, he was a wonderful man.
What a wonderful thing to do.
And by golly, then we put a pipe down. Then we put soup down and told him, there's a soup coming on. The clam chowder and pea soup and stuff. They were hungry.
And know. They were all there alive?
They were all there alive. And by then, we slucked the hole, put on a sprinkle, you know. And we slucked the hole, started from the top, keep on slipping, and they took away that duck, you know. And we had blankets down there, so they were warm, they could sleep warm.
Yes.
And we worked 24 hours on that rigging, the sprinkling, you know. And Walter Fisher was there about 2 days, 2.5 days, I think, to wash out that hole, so it was big enough so he could get down.
And who was this?
Walter Fisher went down the first one.
Yes.
And then Oscar Blomqvist says, I never seen a man looking so pretty as well. Walter Fisher come through that hole down. Oh, he says, then we bought him a watch for present, you know.
Yes.
A watch was about that big. Gold, old gold, and a big diamond
oh,
in the center.
My. Yes.
And then he went to South America, Walter did. And he had that watch, and there was too much. They stole the watch on him. Then he wrote in a newspaper, you know, the PI, stating how he got that watch, that he saved 9 men. And 187 feet on the ground, if it wasn't for him, they would be there yet. Do you know the ship, the clock back to him, the watch back to him?
Whoever stole it.
Whoever stole it. Yeah.
Well,
they were pretty honest thieves.
Yes, they were pretty honest thieves.
Yes, sir.
They had a heart.
Yes, that's
they were
right,
a thief with a heart.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that was very surprising, but by golly, Walter says I'm very much surprised myself. A taxi driver brought it back to him.
Now, who were the men that were down in the shaft?
Well, Oscar Blomqvist and Ed Peterson. They were two white men, the Russians, I didn't know the name.
Oh, the Russians?
Seven Russians.
Seven? There were 9 men down there?
9 men down there.
Seven Russians. And you and Ray...
No, me and
your
Walter...
Your partner.
Me and Walter and... about really canceled. Ben Espy. Ben Espy and me and Walter went to Esther to get the drill.
Went to Esther to get the drill.
Yeah.
I see.
And we walked to the Esther siding from Esther. Then we put it on a train and shipped it to Olnitz. Then we walked it from Olnitz down to the Niggerhead and Walter started drilling.
Now, where would this mine be from Olnitz?
Oh, you go from Olnitz town, it's only about 3/4 mile down to the Walter was digging.
You know where the... Have you been out there lately where the road goes to Livengood and crosses the Chattanooga River there?
Yes, I was. The road was there when I was there, but not to Livengood. But last time I was to Livengood, we drove out to me and my daughter. Yeah.
I was wondering where the mine was.
Well, that's very easy because it's only about 3/4 mile from Olnitz town, straight down towards the river. And it's only about 1/4 mile from the river.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Oh yeah, that was...
That was a kind of a close call.
That was an awful toughest place I ever worked in Alaska, was that place, hard ground, just like it was frozen, even if you steamed it.
Deep.
It was awful hard ground to work. But them days you got cheap wages and good workers. There was lots of men because he had no trouble getting man Walter Fisher, and it was a tough ground, tough place to work. He was good to work with, but the ground was tough.
Oh, he was the man that owned the mine?
He had the lease.
Had the lease.
He had the lease. Yeah, he had
the
lease from Kleinsmith, pulling him up, Kleinsmith.
Kleinsmith?
Yeah, a German. He had a lease of him. So he had to give up royalty. I think it paid 10%. But he made money, but he spent it, pooped it off again, you know. Huh? He made $100,000 the first year I worked for him. Then he commenced to reinvest out in different places, and Fairbank Stick and up this Kokomo. And
did you ever work outside of the Fairbanks area here?
Me? Mm-hmm. No.
You've always worked in the Fairbanks area?
I was out of town there all the time. Uh-huh. If it was mining, it was cutting wood.
Cutting wood?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Cutting wood, all nobody cut. They had thousands and thousands of gold. When the mining was over, I always hit the woods. I could make more money in the woods than I did mining. Even when I worked for the AFI company, I worked 10 months for the AFI company. And I made money, more money cutting wood than I did working for the AFI. But it wasn't cutting wood wasn't study. I had to have study job because I had a bunch of five children to support. And I raised up all by myself.
Now besides this dome mine, what other, which was down this long shaft, what other kind of mining did you do?
I never mined any open cut work. No, I never worked in open cut. In the mining underground, it's not a bit bad in the wintertime because there's nice temperatures.
I see. You can work underground all year round in a way.
Oh, yes. You can work underground all year round. And I liked underground better than I liked on top.
You liked it underground?
Yeah, sure. I liked it. Nice. It wasn't too warm. You worked in short sleeves like this, you know. Well, you had a jumper. We had a light shirt and have a jumper.
So a light shirt and a heavy jumper?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How about the miner's cap with the light on it? Did you use those, you know?
You mean
the hat with the big lamp?
No, we had candles them days.
You did?
No candles, yeah, but there was pool lights, damn pool light. But now these are, they were the carbide.
Yes, the carbide.
They are good, they have carbide lamps, you know.
But you didn't have those?
No, but later I worked in quartz mine, they never used carbide lamps. I worked in birch quartz mine, you know, on Chatham Creek, too.
Chatham Creek?
Yeah.
The birch quartz mine?
Burns.
Yeah. The Burns quartz.
He was a placer miner from the reader, too, and he had a quartz mine
Now, by that you mean hard rock?
Hard rock.
Wasn't a placer mine, huh?
Yeah, hard rock.
I see. How did he mine that?
Oh, drill and backed and shoot. Dolomite, yeah. Uh-huh.
How deep did he go?
Well, they were in the hill there. The mines was in the hill. They were going on went from the side, drove a tunnel in. You know,
I see.
Until they hit the ledge and they worked up. But the ledge was only that wide, good ledge.
8 inches or so.
Yeah.
A very narrow ledge.
Yeah. Something like
that. I see.
Of course, he broke here, but he didn't make no money.
Now, whereabouts was that?
It was up at Chatham Creek,
you said. Yeah. But is that out near Olness, or?
No, it runs into